Once upon a time, out in the Old West, a cowboy was traveling across Colorado on horseback when he stopped in a small town and went into the saloon to get a drink, to refresh himself. Unfortunately, the locals were very unfriendly people who tended to target strangers. So by the time the cowboy finished his drink, when he stepped back outside, his horse was missing. He went back inside. Without saying a word, he drew his revolver. Whoa. He drew his revolver from his holster, tossed it up in the air, twirled it around, caught it without even looking, shot through the ceiling, and then said, "Which one of you sidewinders stole my horse?" Nobody said a word. So the cowboy says, "Okay, this is how it's going to be. I'm going to have another drink. And when I'm finished and go back outside, if my horse is not there, I'm going to do here what I done in Texas. And I don't like to do what I done in Texas." True to his word, the cowboy had another drink. And when he went back outside, the horse was back at the hitching post. As he saddled up to head back out of town, the bartender runs out of the saloon and says, "Wait, stranger, I'm curious. What happened in Texas?" The cowboy said, "I had to walk home." It's not what you're expecting, right? The point of the story is, we live in a world that is not very kind to strangers. I like the way Wikipedia defines stranger as someone who's unknown to another person or group, and because of this unknown status, strangers are often perceived as a threat. That's how we humans are, right? We tend to fear the unknown. We're afraid of what we don't understand. So history is replete with stories of atrocities committed against those who are considered strangers. That's why what Jesus says in our gospel reading today is so important. You heard John share the gospel passage with you just a few moments ago. The setting is the end of the age, and Jesus is on his judgment throne. The teeming masses of humanity gather in front of the throne, some to the left, some to the right. And then Jesus looks to those who are gathered at his right and says to them, verse 34, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a what? Stranger. And you did what? You welcomed me. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me." But this will leave those who are at Jesus' right puzzled, because this is the first time in their life they've directly laid eyes on Jesus. And so they say to Jesus, "When did we feed you? When did we give you something to drink? When were you a stranger and we welcomed you?" And Jesus will say to them, verse 40, "Truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least regarded of these my brothers or sisters, you did it to me." The point being, how we treat strangers, Jesus takes personal. In American culture today has discovered a new group of strangers to target. The favorite target in American culture today has become transgender and non-binary people. It is a targeting that is fueled by the vengeance of hate and fear of that which is unknown. Margaret Wheatley once said, "You can't hate someone whose story you know." That's why welcoming the stranger is so important. When we encounter someone who's coming from a different place in life, our response as followers of Jesus should be to say, "Hey, let's sit down. Let's get acquainted. I'd like to hear your story. I'd like to understand where you're coming from." That's what we're supposed to do as followers of Jesus. But instead, many people who claim the name of Jesus, especially on the religious right, are not practicing what Jesus preached. Instead of saying to those they don't understand, those whose experience is not the same as theirs, instead of saying, "Let's share a meal together. Tell me about yourself." They're targeting out of hate and fear, and in the process, they are wounding Jesus himself, because how we treat strangers, Jesus takes it personally. The wounding, the targeting right now is primarily taking the form of hateful legislation that is directed against transgender people. All kinds of different legislative proposals have been introduced in a multitude of different states, sometimes being adopted. In the last session of the Indiana legislature, there were, I believe, 10 different bills introduced targeting transgender people, two of which passed, and God knows the other eight are probably going to come back along with other inventive ideas that people come up with in the meantime between legislative sessions. The kinds of proposals that are being made, the kinds of proposals that in some places are being passed include bills that prohibit medical practitioners from delivering gender-affirming care to transgender youth, notwithstanding the fact that the parents have considered that to be the best in the best interest of their child. Indiana adopted that bill this year. Other bills that are being bandied around are bills that say that transgender people must use restrooms that are contrary to their gender identity. Other bills say that books about the trans life experience are banned in schools and libraries. Other bills are targeting teachers, saying that teachers can't speak to their students about transgenderism, that if a child asks a question about what it means to be transgender, the teacher is gagged and cannot share any explanatory information. Other bills say that teachers must out kids who want to choose to go by a different name, even if the teacher knows that that parent will respond abusively. The teacher is supposedly forced to tell the parents that the student had made that request. Other bills prohibit the updating of IDs and birth certificates after someone goes through a gender change. And on, the list goes. Targeting that is fueled by hate, that creates this enormous environment of hostility toward transgender people. And Jesus wept as he wondered, "What part of welcoming the stranger do you not understand?"
Amen.
Whatever you do to the least regarded among you, you do it to me, Jesus says. For those who are newcomers here today, we're in the midst of a sermon series called The Bible and Justice: What Love Looks Like in Public. Today is the second installment, and our focus today is on justice for transgender people. As a congregation, during this surge of hate toward transgender people that has arisen in recent times, I must confess to you that as a congregation, we've been slow to respond. And as the lead pastor, the buck stops here. But we can do better, and we will do better. We must do everything that we can to stand with those who are targeted. And so today, by way of doing better, let's get started in that process by making sure we are informed and by thinking deeply about how can we, as individuals and collectively as a church family, respond powerfully to this surge of hate against transgender people. And to help us think through that, I've asked three folks in our congregation who've been deeply affected by the surge in transgender hate to share with us their thoughts and their insights. So I'm going to take a few minutes to talk to each of these folks, ask them to share their thoughts so that we broaden our understanding and broaden our imagination about how and what we can do to stand for justice as Jesus would want us to do. So I want to get started today by talking to Amy Townsend. And most all of you know Amy very well. She's been part of our church for years now. She plays bass guitar for us every Sunday with great artistry. And amen. And recently, when we were in between worship pastors for the better part of a year, she coordinated and guided our worship. Last Sunday, when we were talking about the four primary political movements that were active in Jesus' day, Amy told me afterwards, she said, the movement that I most identified with were the Zealots. The Zealots were the people who were calling for forceful resistance against the occupying Roman forces. Jesus had, that we know of, at least two Zealots in his inner circle that were gathering at his table each night, because Jesus knew that we need Zealots among us to sometimes give us a swift kick in the butt and say, all of us who tend to underreact, and say, we need to do something. So today I want Amy to share with us. Start off, Amy, by telling us, with this surge in hate against transgender people, what's been going on in your heart and mind? How has it affected you?
It has made me very, very angry. I'm sorry about this, but this is just what's been on my heart for months about this, watching this happen. This is wrong. This is wrong what's happening to these children and to the adults. It's scary that it's happening so fast, and it is tied directly to, I'm sorry, the church will not, can I tell you my political beliefs?
Sure.
This is coming from the Republican Party. I'm not a member of the church, so I'm just telling you that's my perspective on this. And one of the best things we can do is stop them. Vote for Democratic politicians. The Republicans have maneuvered so that they have a supermajority in several of the state houses in this country, and they all are banding against us because we're the new scapegoats to help keep the hate going. You know, these are the same people who allowed countless Republicans to die from COVID because they told them lies about the vaccine. And they're doing the same thing now. They're telling lies about approved medical care for young people and for adults. And if you ask my emotions about this, it's been a little bit hard to take. And, I'm really grateful that I'm trying to be a Christian, and I can say that we need to respond with love from this and not with the kind of the anger that I've attempted to do. We have to do what's rational. But if I were to ask a couple things, you know, I've been frustrated that I've been waiting to hear this be discussed, but I'm grateful that we're doing it now. Can I show that first slide I had there? This is written by a writer named Erin in the Morning, and she writes about transgender issues. Very good coverage. I recommend looking her up. But this is what the transgender legislative risk map looked like in December of 2022. And you can see the deeper the red, the more trouble there is. We can see Texas there. We can see Missouri. We can see Florida. And of course, we can see that Illinois is blue, but Indiana is kind of red. Now, if we could have the next slide. This is just a few months later, and this is our country at the moment. There is so much of this going on in states like Montana, Idaho, Utah, Texas. And I want to draw your attention to the state of Florida, which has now been listed as a do not travel state, it's actually not safe for any of us to go there. It's shocking, but so this has kind of been where I've been at with this, but there's also a lot of good news too. Okay, so you know, it was really good to go to Pride yesterday. There was so much support for trans kids out there. That was just wonderful to see that. And that is where, see, that's our reality. That's really where the country is more at. But, and I wanted to point out that the state of Louisiana there, a Republican legislator did something wise and read about the medical, the ramifications of this and voted against. A Republican stood apart from his party to reject their extreme ban on transgender care. So that is a hopeful sign. There are good people out there. There are state senators in Nebraska that have just been absolute, sorry, I won't swear, badasses on about this. And they are like this, really just kind of shut down the whole thing. You see, there's a lot of people on our side. But I'm sorry, I don't mean to get political about this, but the Republicans tend to band together. Ever since January 6, 2021, we have suffered from this kind of surge of hatred, and we know where it came from. It came from Mr. Box's hoax, but the fact is, we're gonna get through this. I want anybody who's worried about this to know that we're gonna get through this. And I've discovered a little bit more courage, and I discovered I'm a zealot, which I did not realize until I was asked about it. But there's good things happening here. Oh, and a federal judge blocked many of the provisions on the Florida bill. So you see, it is still possible for us to move forward. I believe that all these things are completely unconstitutional, but what we need is legal action. So what I intend to do going forward is to try to gently, calmly contact Republican representatives, whether or not they've already voted, because they're going to be expressing their opinion again at some point. If we could just get some of them, many of them are Christians, as you pointed out, that's something we have in common with some of them. They're supposed to know about this. So maybe we could get some of them to change their hearts and minds a little bit. I also recommend that we keep in touch with the ACLU and the ACLU of Indiana, because that's where the legal action is happening. We need to have legal action, and that's our next step moving forward with this, is we have wonderful shows of support, and that's, you know, it makes me feel really good about that. But anybody who's struggling or suffering, let's have courage, because we're all in this together, and I ain't going away, okay? I love this place, I love the city, and we're going to do this, we're going to do this together. But it really breaks my heart to think that people want to take away health care from kids. I'm getting back to the beginning, I probably better stop talking.
Thank you. Let the record reflect for IRS tax exemption purposes that the church does not endorse any political party. All voices are welcome, and thank you for sharing so passionately. Before I turn to KG, just some of the transgender folks you know and love, how is this upsurge in hate affecting them?
Well, one of them is a dear friend of mine. They're teenagers thinking about high school wrapping up and going to college. They would be such a bright light to have in Indiana. They're brilliant, they are forceful, they are so talented, but they're kind of going, you know what, maybe I better move to California, or maybe I better move to New York. A lot of people are trying to move out of Florida. It's gonna be a brain drain. It's no good for anybody for this to happen. So that's kind of sad to think about that. But the same person, their family, has been through a dynamic that I think a lot of families are going through right now. We've reached a generational point of compassion where kids are starting to get acknowledged for being trans. And that's a huge step forward. And so that's great for them, and it's great for their parent who is supporting them, but the grandparents are having a real hard time with it. And so they were just, no, 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 no. And they're hearing, in their church service, they're hearing, you know, hateful stuff. But over time, and with prayer, they're starting to come around. See, this is a big struggle that a lot of families are having, but a little patience and a lot of love, I think we could get there. That's just, I'm optimistic about the future for this.
You can't hate somebody whose story you know.
Yeah.
And as transgender people come out, more and more of us know their story and say, what were we so afraid of? I want to introduce you to KG Agbula. And KG has been worshiping with us for several months now. And since she is relatively new to our congregation, I want to start off by asking KG, will you share with us a little bit about where you're from and what brought you to the United States?
Hello, everyone. My name is KG, and I'm originally from West Africa, Nigeria. Well, Nigeria, where I come from, it's a little bit difficult to be a member of LGBTQI+. There are laws that will criminalize you, send you to prison for up to 14 years. And
Say that again, what?
It's send you to prison for up to 14 years.
Wow.
Yeah, so Nigeria, it's divided in north, south, east, and west. In the northern part of Nigeria, you get stoned to death for being a member of the LGBTQI+ community. In the western part of Nigeria, you go to prison. Well, Nigeria is mostly Islam and Christians, so you know what it means. So most of their laws have been considered and been laid out by religion. Well, coming from a family of five, I was born male, four sisters, so high expectations. It was a little bit hard living in Nigeria, you know, your true self. You have to hide every bit of who you are. And you just have to live in shell. You're not allowed to express yourself. You can go on a date. And churches actually makes it worse. I was a member of a church. My mom was a deaconess, and so I have to go to church with her every Sunday. And mostly, what you hear or what is spilled out is hate. Sodom and Gomorrah was a perfect example to criminalize same-sex marriage or same-sex relations. They tell you you would die. They tell you end with AIDS and you would die. So that's what I grew up with, the mentality of, yes, if you're gay, you're lesbian, you're trans, you will die. It's an untimely death. You won't live to fulfill your destiny on earth. That's the basis of the sermon when it comes to stuff like homosexuality. Well, coming to the United States was a decision that I made after my high school. I was at the University of Lagos in Nigeria studying sociology, but things were a little bit hard, and I thought to myself that I just had to, you know, escape from the hostility and the toxic environment. So, in Nigeria, it's mostly, when they say you're gay, or you're trans, or you're bi, they tell you it's from the Western world. Then I say to myself, okay, fine. If it's from the Western world, then I better be in the Western world. Well, with my parents, it's been not accepting, not discriminatory, but they've been on the fence. My mom might want to accept me, but her friends in church would attack me. I never cared. I always wear makeup to church. I lived my life unapologetically, and I'm just who I am. But considering the fact that my parents would get bashed, especially in the community, so instead of being selfish, then I decided to leave the country. Mm. Coming to the United States, it's been awesome. But nowadays, what's going on in the US with the laws of, you know, against trans, it's sad. But like I believe, it won't last forever. Better days are ahead. And at the end of every tunnel, there's a shining light. So whatever any trans person is going through right now, it's just a phase. And to the legislations and to the people saying, let the kids be kids. Before you have a trans adult, you have to be a trans kid. So it's a process. So you cannot be a gay kid and be a trans adult. Being a trans adult has to start from childhood. I knew who I was, started from the age of 5, when you start having imaginary friends in your head, you know, I always want to play the mama role and someone else play the papa role. So I know who I was. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But when you see the society and what society thinks of you, it means confusion. You cannot leave if you're being denied your reality. You're attacking those kids, you're killing them. They cannot leave without being themselves. It's unfortunate, but you know, it is what it is right now, and I hope it gets better soon.
Yeah. Oh, Amy is saying her shoes are amazing.
Thank you.
I thought you were saying my shoes were amazing. How old were you when you understood your, became aware of your identity?
About 50. But I had a very neurotic childhood because I was, you know, just not happy with anything. Mm-hmm. Trying to be masculine, and that ship never left the dock. So, you know, eventually found my way here.
Yeah, yeah. KG, how did all of this affect your faith journey?
I mean, it's definitely it would. I mean, the church was supposed to be a safe haven, but they cast you out. It's been hate, and so you just want to find a safe place. So during the process of finding validity of, you know, looking for people to accept you or where to be accepted, most people would actually fall into the wrong hands. And, you know, it would affect their journey, you know, into life. So the church should be a welcoming place. I mean, starting from England, where the first church, it was a welfare unit, you know, that welcomes people and trying to help people regardless of their faith or what they believed in. So it's unfortunate right now that most of the churches we have in Africa, it spills hate, and they are not safe places, not even a gay church to attend. So instead of you going to church and, you know, demonizing yourself or, you know, thinking to yourself that you're not worth it, it's better you actually hop in the club and, you know, hang out with friends and just feel safe somewhere else, like a safe place. Although there are no safe places, but you just have to create it. I mean, I had a couple of friends, you know, and we hang out and...
You know what's interesting? When I come in this church, I feel so safe and comfortable. You know, most people know I'm a pretty nice person. When I go out in the regular world, I've got about 50% of people who just won't even look at me. And if you know me, you know I'm a really kind, generally a nice person. So it's kind of weird to think that so many people won't do that. But on the other hand, the other 50% are like very, very supportive and helpful. So again, you know, that's where the future is. It's just kind of weird. It's something maybe you don't realize about being trans is just there's so much pushback. I think that's a cause of so many of the mental health struggles that we have, is because there's so much pushback. But like I said, there's a lot of people who are really supportive of me too, so that makes me feel very good.
Given all the hate the church has directed at you, the Church Universal, okay. Why do you still seek faith in your life? What keeps faith alive in you?
Yeah, to be honest, actually, this is my years in the United States. I never attended any church. This is my first church ever, and I've been here for like almost 10 years. Finding faith is like finding peace. I'm at the point in my life when I just, you know, I just want this peace of mind, and, you know, so, and I believe God is love. So it doesn't really matter what other people think, you know. I cannot deviate from the fact that I want to, you know, be a Christian. I want to serve God regardless. And that's just what it is. Even on the cross, when Jesus was being nailed, the thief on the cross actually, you know, God actually showed him mercy and favor. Anyway, he dwelled in heaven with Jesus Christ. So, I mean, it's just what it is. And I'm just, it's just a peace of mind. And just one that's inner peace. And yeah, that's just it.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. And now I want to introduce David Lurs. David and his wife Christy have been part of our church for a little over a year now, and also an active part of our Thursday night Oasis. David. Tell us how the surge in hate against transgender people has affected you as a father and as a high school teacher at Southport High School.
Well, yeah, so as I think about this, it affects me on both sides, personally and professionally, because obviously my daughter came out as transgender a little over a year ago, about 2 months before her 16th birthday. You know, I think we're going to talk a little bit more about that here in a minute. But professionally, you know, almost half of those laws dealt with schools and education. So I teach history and political science and a class called Ethnic Studies, where we sort of unpack discrimination in all its forms. So this is stuff that I talk about because it happens, right? I've had transgender students every year I've been a teacher. And all that those kids have wanted is to be treated like everyone else, right? That's it. No one has asked for special permission or special privileges. They just want the same rights and treatment that everyone else has. And you know, these are issues that we've talked about before. You know, I teach about the gay liberation movement. I talk about the issues of LGBTQ rights in my government class, my history class. But this year, as these laws were being debated and passed, it had a noticeable effect on the kids. You could tell. One of them, she said she was having a mental health spiral. And after the laws passed, a couple I didn't see for days, like almost well over a week. And that really, I mean, your mind goes to a dark place there, because in the last year before these laws were passed, 54% of transgender youth in this state considered suicide, right? 54%. That is five times higher than cisgender youth, right? One in five attempted suicide, which is also five times higher than transgender youth. So, you know, I was deeply concerned, and it took a couple weeks for them to bounce back. But what helped them was myself and some other teachers who were like-minded. We gave them a space to vent. We gave them a safe space. We talked about the issues that concerned them and made them realize that, you know, people do care about them. And that's huge, because, and I was just recently looking at this, if a teacher affirms a transgender student, they are 34% less likely to contemplate suicide.
Wow.
Right? 34%. And I would love to say that everybody I work with is affirming and open, but unfortunately that's not the case. And so with these laws, you know, even though the identity law mainly affects the teaching at the K to third grade level, the language is so vague that if I talk about things that I normally teach about, because they actually happened and they affect my students, and I want them to see themselves in the history and the fabric of this country, I could lose my teaching license, right? I could be fired. I could be arrested, you know? So the safe space that these kids have could go away. Not because I want it to go away, but because people have decided that we shouldn't talk about these things because it might upset other people. So it has, and you know, that kills me, because I pride myself on speaking to all my students and making sure that they can all see themselves in what we talk about. And, you know, it breaks me when they thank me for just treating them like I treat everybody else. You know, mm-hmm. Just treating them like they're a normal kid, speaking to their issues, allowing them to feel safe, you know, basic human decency, and these laws are going to strip that away if they continue on this path. So. Yeah, it's, and that's the professional side of it, right? I, you know, and obviously I'm trying not to be emotional, but so that's just from a teaching perspective how I see that going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When your daughter came out to you and Christy, how did you respond? How did that hit you?
Well, I would say that. Honestly, it was almost relief and immediate acceptance, because she had mental health struggles, anxiety and depression, really since kindergarten, so starting school. And prior to coming out, she had gone through a 2-week depressive episode that's the worst we'd ever seen, to the point where we were checking on her and we were concerned that she might consider hurting herself. So when she told us, it was, we could literally see the weight being lifted.
What are you saying, Tandy?
Pull your mic up.
Pull it up? Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Okay.
I'm used to being loud enough to fill the room. you could visibly see the weight being lifted. So I remember very clearly my first words to her. She told her mom first. My first words to her was that I loved her unconditionally, and nothing she could ever do would change that, and I would do whatever I had to make sure that she got to be the person she was. And
you can imagine what that means to a vulnerable child.
And part of that, I think, is because I had experience with transgender students for so long, mm-hmm. so it didn't faze me. Mm-hmm. Now, Christy didn't have as much experience with transgenderism, but she was very enthusiastic about supporting Peyton, doing whatever was necessary to help Peyton. She bought a lot of books to sort of have a better understanding and to think about what Peyton might be going through and how to help Peyton. She wanted to take her to buy all new clothes. She wanted to start doing stuff with her hair, all the stuff that moms want to do with daughters. And that's big because, you know, much like just having a teacher who accepts a student decreases the suicide rate, having one affirming parent reduces the possibility of suicide by 43% for transgender youth. So I don't know that there's a statistic for having two affirming parents, but it's one of those things where even before these statistics, before I knew about these statistics, we had vowed that we would do whatever was necessary to affirm her and allow her to live her life as best as she could and be as happy as she could and keep her safe, because that's what parents are supposed to do. And it blows my mind to read some of these stories that I've read. You know, over half of all homeless youth are in the LGBTQ community because their families reject them. And I can't fathom that. And, you know, regularly, and members, the second row there, or fourth row there, have talked about, you know, us being good parents, and I appreciate that, but I've told this to them before, but like, what does it say about our society that simply doing, just affirming your child and looking out for your child means that you're, you know, something, doing something special? Mm-hmm. It's like, right now, it's like I can't, there's not a whole lot of time to not think about this, because if I think about work, it comes up. When I'm home, it comes up. So, but we will do whatever it takes. We've even discussed the possibility of having to move should they push this ban to a higher age, because she won't be 18 until next year, after theoretically this ban takes place.
Quickly, for the three of you, if you could ask one thing of us as a congregation, as a collective, in responding to the anti-trans hate, what would you ask? In any order here.
Love. You know, keep spreading love and acceptance, and like Pastor Jeff said, whatsoever you do to the least of my brothers, so you do unto me. So you plant love, you cultivate love. You spill hate, you get hate. So the whole world is looking up to the church. And just keep doing what you're doing. Acceptance and love. That's all we ask for. And that's all that can keep us strong. And, you know, give all the vibes and the strive to keep fighting. And we can do this alone. We need the church. So let's do this together. And I know we'll get there. Thank you.
Well, I would love it if we all kind of got involved with trying to persuade Republican lawmakers, or, you know, just like I said, gentle, loving persuasion. Don't do what I am always tempted to do. Be nice to them. And I want the church to keep us informed of these things on a regular basis, so we know what's going on. I mean, the maps I showed were 4 months apart, 5 months apart, and then suddenly it was boom, it was like that.
So I'll try to keep it short. I struggled with this question a little bit because, you know, I imagine that most congregations, like my Oasis family, and they are very accepting and welcoming and loving, but I think it kind of echoing these two ladies have said, I would say, don't be a bystander, right? If you care about justice, if you care about civil rights, you know, pay attention, push back. Because when I think about this, I think of it as a civil rights issue. John Lewis, civil rights icon, congressman, passed away recently. He spent the last years of his life championing LGBTQ equality because he said it was the next phase of the civil rights movement. And so when I think about that and I think about this, I'm reminded of two of my favorite quotes from Dr. King's letter from a Birmingham jail, which he wrote to white clergymen who told him he was an outsider and that he needed to back off and wait for things to happen naturally and to be patient and let politicians handle politics. And the two lines are back to back. I have them both posted in my room separately, but injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. All men are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied together in a single garment of destiny. What affects one directly affects all indirectly. And when I think of that, I'm reminded of this idea that oppression grows when we're indifferent. And oppressors are emboldened when we take comfort and complacency. And hate grows when we don't bother with something because it doesn't affect us directly, right? And so these folks, they if they win in one area, what's to stop them from going after another, right? So today it's transgender folks like these ladies here, my daughter, right? But these same politicians who are pushing these laws also want the Supreme Court to revisit the Obergefell decision, which legalized gay marriage, or the Loving decision, which legalized interracial marriage, or the Griswold decision, which told women they could have some control over their bodies. Some have even brought up revisiting Brown versus the Board of Education, which outlawed segregated schools, right? So the point is if we don't push back, they keep going, right? So don't be a bystander. Pay attention specifically to state and local politics. These are not national policies. These are state policies. The maps that Amy had you see, those are state policies, right? We know national politics. Most of us don't know who our state representative is or our state senator is, right? And that allows these folks to keep getting reelected and keep crafting these laws with little to no input from us. So I guess to make a long story longer, decide what your non-negotiables are when it comes to justice, when it comes to civil rights issues, what matters to you, and then research these policies and these politicians and vote for those who align with what matters to you. Don't just cast a ballot, fill in a blank because it's the easiest thing to do. Make sure what they stand for is what you stand for. Because as Amy pointed out, statistics show that more than two-thirds of Americans support LGBTQ rights and transgender equality. There are more of us than there are of them, but when all we do is hope things will get better, it doesn't, right? One of my favorite bands has a lyric and it says, "Hope is a prison." Right, and I think we allow ourselves to be trapped by just hoping things will get better and not doing things. And that means, again, informing yourself, voting, if you hear somebody spouting nonsense, push back respectfully, because mostly what I hear from people are talking points that are not based in reality, right? We can't just sit back and let it happen because it doesn't directly affect us, right? So we have to push back because, like I said, it's transgender today. Who knows what it'll be tomorrow?
If you don't know who your state legislators are, go to commoncause.org, and they have a legislator finder there that will give you all the contact information you need. Just a simple note saying, this is crazy, let's stop this. And speaking from the perspective of faith, saying, I'm a person of faith, I'm a follower of Jesus, and I want this to stop, because they don't expect that from people of faith.
ACLU Indiana also makes it easy to reach out to state representatives.
ACLU Indiana as well. Let me close with this, because we're running a little over time. In his book, The Power of Partnership, John Maxwell reminds us that in April of 1940, Nazi tanks rumbled into the tiny northern European nation of Denmark and quickly vanquished Denmark's armed forces and set up a provisional government. They allowed the king, the titular king of Denmark, to remain in position, but he had no power, just a figurehead. Soon thereafter, the Nazis issued a decree that every Danish Jewish person would be required to wear a yellow star in public, a Star of David in public, so that they could be marked for oppression, harassment, muggings, and eventually rounded up. For the king of Denmark, who ironically was named Christian the X, what should a Christian do when confronted with something like this? He took the risk of calling on all of his people, Jew or Gentile, to wear yellow stars of David in public so that no one, the Nazis, couldn't figure out who the real Jews were. Maxwell, in his book, invites us to imagine if you lived in Denmark at that time as a Gentile, the morning after King Christian has called upon people to wear the stars of David, what would you have been thinking and feeling? What if I'm the only Gentile who wears a star? Will I get swept up in the hate again? What would you have done? What happened the next morning was nothing short of miraculous. There were yellow stars of David everywhere. And Danish Jews wept because they were not alone. Their fellow citizens were standing with them. That is the spirit of Jesus Christ. And we who follow Jesus are called to live in that spirit. I want to challenge each one of us individually to be fierce advocates for our transgender sisters and brothers. And I want to promise that we as a church are going to get a collective strategy so that when the next Indiana legislative session rolls around, they hear from us, not just from us, we can organize a network of faith leaders in Indiana that will speak in unison. We did this 20 years ago on the gay issue. We can do it now on the transgender issue. We can make a difference. We will make a difference, because whatever you do to those who are least regarded among you, Jesus says, you've done it unto me. Sorry for running a little bit over. A big thanks to all of you. We are so grateful.